You're listening to Unscripted, the podcast by Scripted.com.
Welcome back to the Unscripted podcast. I'm Ryan Buckley, the CEO and co-founder of Scripted, and I'm joined today by Avishai Sharon, the founder and CEO of Trendemon. Welcome to the show, Avishai.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So tell us about yourself first. What's your story as an entrepreneur?
So I got started in building websites back in high school.
Wow.
That's how I got involved. Yeah, way back.
Dreamweaver days?
Yeah, the horrible frames and really some nasty-looking websites that I made back in those days.
Uh-huh.
And I used to just do it for fun, and at one point I realized I could charge money for that, which really surprised me at the beginning, that people would pay to get their websites built. So that's how I got into the online world. And kind of grew from there to having this kind of very small agency. So I went up from my parents' basement, started kind of a very small agency, started recruiting people, and really started working with a lot of B2B companies. So I'm based out of Israel. A lot of the companies here, you know, are selling internationally. So a lot of B2B startups and tech companies are here, and that was kind of a niche that kind of focused on pretty from the start. And we used to do a lot of marketing automation integrations back in that time, building the websites, doing content marketing for those companies as an agency, and helping them distribute it and promote it. And it was during those days that you kind of started to see the trend of bigger investments in technologies and marketing technologies for companies, but also their growing investment in content marketing, and how that became kind of a major play for many of those companies.
And are you still technical?
I wish I'd say yes, but I've shifted to product many years ago.
Yeah.
Fortunately for the tech team and for our customers, I don't do tech anymore. So yeah, just kind of reading about it and try to stay up to date, but usually I do more damage than
right. So you think if you had to build a website today, do you think you could?
Oh, no way. Before.
Nice. What do you think of frameworks like Bootstrap, by the way, as someone who came up in HTML and design and now you're focused on product? Like, what do you think of the CSS framework phenomenon?
I think that, you know, in general, it's just so much of the stuff out there that's ready, that's mature, and it's really about integrating today, really about finding what's the best mix rather than really hardcore coding and building everything. Scratch, you know, back in our days, it was really about building everything from the database to the HTML.
Yep.
And it's really about finding the right match today, I think, and that's kind of the thing. With deeper technology, you know, if you go beyond the website and the user interface, then you have to know kind of really the basics and the core. But other than that, I think there's some awesome frameworks there. Good to see that pickup.
Yeah, so you came at your current company from the perspective of someone who's built websites and did some marketing consulting. What opportunity did you see in the market that led you to start Trendemon?
So basically when we started Trendemon, it was essentially because we were getting asked by many of our customers, so what's the value, right? So you're charging these companies for creating content, for distributing content, and at the end of the day, you're really trying to figure out and try to prove the value for that. And the other thing that we knew from integrating all these technologies is that most of the data was already there. It wasn't connected in the right context or in a meaningful way. And so that was kind of the initial idea, was to let's try and figure out content marketing ROI.
Yeah.
And, you know, as an arrogant entrepreneur, you think, how hard can that be, really? And 3 years later, I can tell you it's pretty damn hard.
It's hard.
Of course, and we still are learning and developing and growing. But that was when we figured out that, you know, at one point there's going to be a focus on the attribution aspect of it, the impact, and that would need an entire framework around content to really help externalize the benefits, because content really is an amazing channel, and it affects many parts of the customer journey. So if you just look at it from the acquisition perspective, you may get just a certain set of values, but you need to look at it also from the retention perspective, from even HR. You know, it has such a wide influence when you're trying to really understand impact and ROI that you have to zoom out really to get the whole picture.
Yeah. So and by the way, we met a few months ago, and whenever I'd gone to your site or like kind of said the name of your company in my head, it was always Trendemon. I heard you say Trendemon, and I feel terrible about it's using the wrong pronunciation of your company name at the start of the podcast. So Trendemon.
Yeah, it's most of the company members say Trendemon like you say as Israeli. So
Okay. Got it. So I was going to ask on the question of ROI, how do you get at the investment part of the equation? Like, does your software capture that? Just in terms of like the writing cost, or are you really looking at the acquisition of the traffic from like a paid spend standpoint, like a PPC or AdWords?
So in that equation of really the return on the investment, we found that the bigger variable and the bigger unknown was really what was the outcome, what was the influence on the customer journey in terms of the deals, in terms of the progress to the customer journey, less on kind of the mix of the cost, which is, you know, relatively known, right? Usually the customers know their spend either on content creation or on the advertising. What they didn't know, what was really lacking, was the other side of what was the influence of content on, for example, a $25,000 deal.
Uh-huh.
Right? So that was the place that we focused our efforts rather than kind of on collecting the data, the information on the spends themselves. We have the customers who are looking and correlating that, but we're more focused really on the influence on the journey and the impact on revenue as a way to find the ROI.
I see. Got it. So your definition of, we get asked all the time from our customers, why should I blog? Like, what's my ROI going to be if I spend X number of dollars on getting a blog post produced and then maybe amplified on Outbrain or Taboola? How would you answer that question? Like, how should people think about the ROI of content marketing?
So, you know, of course, you know, every company has a different, you know, ASP,
yep,
different segment. The way we look at it, and just kind of as a rough kind of benchmark in terms of what the levels of influence that content has on, at least from the data that we're seeing. So we're seeing companies that basically their content, their blog, is contributing anywhere from 30% influence on the deals, anywhere from that's the mid range up to the higher levels of 60-70% influence.
Wow.
And so the reason that I think the way that needs to be looked at is really to try to flip it and try to look at, let's look at our existing customers,
yep,
and how many of them actually interacted with content, and was it meaningful, how long did it take, which specific articles, and then from there you can kind of carve out what was the relative value and work your way back from there to the costs question, which again is relatively known as straightforward, and then see how those investments made sense over time. The other thing that we help them understand is what's the length of the customer journey, because that's a key variable when you're trying to attribute impact.
Yep.
Right, because if it takes 3 months to get a customer, you need to look at that time spent.
Yep.
You're not going to do, for example, you mentioned Outbrain. You know, we're working with Outbrain, we're working with Taboola, and really great companies. But if you try to measure an average journey that on average takes 3 months, but you try to measure it after 2 weeks and try to say, okay, well, do I get positive ROI from that campaign, and you look 2 weeks back, you're not going to get the right answer. You're not going to get the meaningful answer, was that productive or not.
Yep.
You need to look at it at the right perspective and the right time frame. And also really trying to attribute, and that's the tricky part, attribute every source along the way, because you can have multiple sources coming into your site. They're going to come starting from maybe Outbrain, then they come back from Facebook and then LinkedIn, and then eventually they're going to convert, for a sign up through Google. And you're going to have to try to define, that's what part of what our technology helps with, is, divide the value and attribute the value between those different sources, depending on the level of engagement with the content, depending on how many goals or events they achieved on site. So as a more dynamic approach to attribution modeling, rather than just a rigid first, last, time decay, the current models that are out there.
Got it. So what about, have you seen so you have another product, and I guess I should take a quick step back and describe Trendymon as both an analytics tracking company for your content marketing that, like you said, tracks the customer journeys, durations, will help you understand the impact that a post or a set of posts has on the conversion potential of a given customer. Then you also have the Engage product, which I have to imagine will improve the ROI metrics that you're tracking. So it's like you kind of have the measurement tool, and then you have another product that improves the things that you're measuring. Have you seen, can you say for people who are using your engagement product versus those who are not, that there's a noticeable difference in the ROI output?
So first, they're the same product, so we're not marketing
okay.
them. But there are different value. You're correct. There are different offerings, and if we take a step just a little further from what we are trying to do and what we're helping our customers do, is first of all find the alignment between their marketing efforts, especially their content marketing efforts, and their business goals. I think this is the key question that we ask our customers, and that we want to figure out first of all: are your marketing efforts contributing to your business goals? So that part is answered by the analytics and the attribution.
Yep.
And then we look at how we can improve that journey through personalization, and create that alignment and help those customers within the journey, or those leads or visitors within your website, to proceed kind of more efficiently, more effectively down the journey. And that's why we look at these two units as kind of very synergistic working very nicely together, because the inputs from the personalization engine also helps to feed back to our analytics. So if I recommend you several pieces of content, I can use that as a test bit to give you insights about which content is more engaging and helps drive more people.
Yeah.
Because if I'm just looking at the analytics, I have information that is just based on what's happening. If you have great content, but it's not being exposed, it's very hard. You're not going to have any data on it. So you need to put it in front of potential buyers and see, does that engage them? But I think it all boils down to the fact that you see in many companies a misalignment and a bad definition of what's the purpose of my content, which goals is it supposed to drive. And once you have those questions in place and you have those measurements in place, it's easier to have a much more meaningful discussion in terms of what should be done, what should be written about, what should be promoted. And also to prove kind of the value, besides just the ROI, just what is the influence of my content, of my marketing, on that kind of main effort that I'm trying to drive? How does it affect MQLs or SQLs further down?
Got it. That's really cool. It makes a lot of sense. Before I dive into some other questions, I do have one just curiosity that I've had for a while, and I'm gonna ask you because I got you on the line, How is it that there are so many content marketing companies coming out of Israel? I'm thinking, like, you know, just you guys, Outbrain, Taboola, is it just coincidence, or is there something there?
it's a great question. I really don't know what kind of gravitated that. But uh-huh. I think maybe the ecosystem, and especially the B2B ecosystem, which is, you know, a lot of companies out of here are B2B using content. I think that could have been one of the catalysts for why this ecosystem kind of you know, went from here. But I really don't have a good enough. It's a great question. I really don't know why that is.
yeah, I don't know.
But there is also a very big bias towards analytics companies and, okay. and really attribution, and also some companies here. And that relates pretty heavily to kind of work done here, again, on AI, big data.
Yeah.
That, very similar to the work done in the Valley, I think. A very, very close kind of DNAs of companies.
Yeah.
In those respects.
Yeah. There's another Israeli company on your website, Fiverr. Like, they're headquartered in New York, but I'm pretty sure their CEO founder is Israeli, and I think they were based out of Tel Aviv for a while. What are you doing with them?
So with companies, Fiverr, Taboola again, and other companies, what we're doing is helping them, just like I mentioned, understand the influence of content on their goals. So how, let's say I have a community area or a content area, how does that translate into people buying, retaining them, etc. So giving those insights.
Yeah.
And also optimizing journeys in real time. So real-time personalization, being able to show the right message to the right user at the right time based on what we've seen them do, based on what we predict would be the next logical move for them out of any kind of possible set of events that you might want them to complete. Would it make more sense for them to sign up for the blog, or do you want them to sign up, you know, for the platform, or you know, expose them to other content? So all of these things, and pretty much the system is one size fits all. So we're not doing any customization apart from maybe just a bit of UI adaptations, but it's the same system for the B2B, which is kind of the main focus of the company. We also have some B2C companies working with us, marketplaces, companies in the fintech industry like Payoneer also. You know, a great partner. And we see this. It takes a different kind of attitude, I think, in the B2B space, because you really have to understand customer journeys in a very deep way in order to also externalize insights about them, but also in order to really optimize and improve them.
Yep. I noticed that you integrate with a lot of other platforms, Marketo, HubSpot. I'm curious because I know from our experience doing that at Scripted, it's a very time-consuming, often very costly process to build those integrations and then also maintain them because their APIs keep changing. How has that worked for you, and like what's your strategy in connecting to these other platforms?
So you're completely right. It was very painful in the beginning, especially
yep.
when you're not really sure. And I think it relates to the business focus. I think it relates to when you're not really sure exactly who you're targeting, what your value proposition is. You find yourself doing a lot of different integrations and spending and wasting a lot of effort on many types of integrations. As we kind of honed in on our ideal customer type, that allowed us to not just focus on specific platforms that we want to integrate with, and they make up kind of the main marketing stack, technology stack of our ideal customers, but also within those integrations, what's important and what could be maybe less relevant. And I think that kind of generally, as you kind of find yourself focusing further and further, everything else becomes much clearer in terms of where should you focus your efforts. Having said that, integrations, I think, has been an immense kind of force multiplier when you're approaching customers, when you're when you're looking to expand your proposition, especially with the marketing automation platforms out there, allows you to not just optimize performance on your end, but also give them a lot of insights that they are not maybe collecting, or push some information there. But yeah, there's no shortcuts. We haven't found kind of a silver bullet. Maybe there are other companies out there, maybe in your other interviews. But it's just about really kind of getting your hand and taking a risk because, you know, as you said, once they change stuff, you're kind of vulnerable in that respect.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those bets you just need to take.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Cool. Well, so I want to segue to some questions more directly about you as a CEO and entrepreneur. First of all, how do you like being CEO?
How do I like it? it's challenging. I think there's just a lot of responsibility as the team grows. You know, when you're just starting out or it's just a small team, it's more kind of just you and you know, two, three other guys. When, as the team grows, you really feel like there's that responsibility and pressure to make sure the company is doing well. You know, family, people who have families, people who have commitment.
Yeah.
So that is, you know, that is one aspect. The other thing is that you really, you find kind of being able to deal kind of within those spaces, you're able to help wherever help is needed. So you kind of more flexible. So, for example, I'm doing a lot of the content writing because right now I'm pretty much the one who does that, who has some ability for it. And actually, I love it. I really love being kind of the CMO of the company, as it were.
Yep.
And that really helps kind of also align, kind of put myself in the customer perspective more often than I would as just doing kind of the regular stuff. So that is, I think, that is some of the things that I really like about it. You know, as an entrepreneur as well, is that you have the good days, you have the bad days, you have the really bad days.
Yep, absolutely.
And
so how big is your team now?
So we're now 11.
Nice.
11 people.
And are you bootstrapped or funded?
So we did a small round a few months back. So we're funded, but we're also pretty much getting to cash flow positive in the sense that we can, you know,
that's great.
Carry our own weight.
That's so key, and that's something that we've struggled with over the years and have kind of had to learn the importance of the hard way. I have the utmost respect for companies, especially with as complex a product as yours, with the footprint that you do for bootstrapping. And I would not have guessed that you only have 11 employees. I thought you had more. So that's awesome. How do you prioritize and say no to things?
So I think as a company, one of the things that I found very helpful is that when the entire company is what we call in a hyper-focus mode, so everybody in the company knows who our ideal customer is, how we're supposed to help them, what's our value proposition, it creates this very strong alignment all across the vertical, all across the, you know, the various parts. So sales knows, marketing, customer success, product, support. And that way you can delegate a lot of that prioritization to kind of, you know, the lower levels. And basically they can carry out any decision that you can as well. If, let's say, a lead comes and it's not relevant, they have the same, you know, ability to prioritize. So less of that comes back to you and less discussions about should we do this, shouldn't we do that. So that's kind of on the company level. I think that is something that it helped us a lot to be kind of be very kind of disciplined. It has its downsides that you're sometimes saying no to opportunities, which could generate short-term revenue, but you're sacrificing company focus, company resources. And we even had to let some customers go when we did that kind of focusing. But I think all in all, it just helped us be very kind of aligned with continuing to grow and also being able to know when we're not growing, why is it? You know, why did we achieve those metrics? Because you're doing a very specific set of tests that you're supposed to be dealing with.
Yeah, and I think that's such a great habit to get into, and I think it ties back to just your trajectory and bootstrapping and staying close to cash flow break even. Again, like I'm increasingly biased towards running businesses that way. It sounds like you do some writing. Are you very deliberate about when you write? Do you have to carve out times of day, or how do you do that?
So I found that really I try to make time for that really early in the morning.
Uh-huh.
It's something that I really hate. I'm not a morning person, not by a long shot. I hate mornings. I had to kind of force myself to wake up at 5, so I try to wake up really early at 5 a.m. I have two kids, and so they wake up around 6:30. So I have this kind of hour in the beginning of the day where you can really kind of be in the zone and really trying to immerse yourself in the subject matter of what you're trying to write about. And so this is kind of how I find the time. And then kind of during the day, I try to find maybe small bits of time that I can work on it. It's not very planned. It's not that methodology. You know, I don't have that very strict methodology of when do I post and when do I publish. I try to do like every couple of weeks. And so it has a critical mass of what I feel, you know, research and insight and information. Also, I harass our tech team for data. We have all that. And so I'm just always constantly asking them for, you know, for their inputs and what they're seeing and do that. But all in all, I think this is a key skill that every entrepreneur needs to kind of, you know, even if they're not from the space or if there's something they're not used to, they need to get themselves writing and having their thoughts, even if they're not looking at themselves, even not looking to publish it. Publishing, of course, is great. But I think for entrepreneurs, for CEOs especially, it's very important to drive you, not just to kind of have your thoughts laid out, but also to research. It gets you kind of researching information, looking for new information, and really kind of re-examining maybe ideas that you have when on the day-to-day, you don't really have time to do that. Writing makes you kind of really focus on that. So I found it really helpful kind of psychologically and really fun as well.
Very cool. So you mentioned one, call it like a morning productivity hack. You wake up before your kids do. Is there anything else that you do regularly to improve your productivity?
So, you know, apart from really trying to stay to rigid, you know, sleep and waking up cycles, or really, you know, 10 p.m. I hit the bed and it's like even mid show, right? You're watching TV with your with your wife and she's like, okay, you know. And I think you have to be there. I do try to at least run once a week, and I think again, it's a psychological thing, really helps you focus and air clear your head and see things much more clearly. So try to do that. Not a lot of time with two kids, but really try and push that. The other thing is being very kind of selective when I go over my emails. So just really having just specific time slots in the day that I go over emails. You know, some people find that annoying. They try to catch you, but they know that, you know, I'm not gonna be all the time on the email.
Yeah.
And reducing news to zero, really, I just found that is, especially in Israel, you know, in Israel, it's never a good thing. It's never going to be like, peace is here. No, it's not going to be that. So just, you know, not going to waste effort on that and, you know, remove that from the schedule.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you got enough to think about between work and family. So thank you for joining us all the way from Israel, nighttime there, I think, right? What time is it?
It's 4 to 8.
Okay, all right. Well, getting close to your
bedtime.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again for sharing all your wisdom. This is Ryan signing off from the Unscripted Podcast.
Thank you, Ryan. It was a pleasure.